This episode is brought to you by Joe's Pizza Shop. If you're looking for some fire takeout, head on over to their new location at 8154 Jeanne d'Arc Boulevard. Order the 40 Creek Large Pizza, our personal favorite, which is guaranteed to satisfy your Monday night cravings. They also offer various crispy chicken options, such as wraps and sandwiches, which are all must-haves. Whatever you're feeling, Joe's Pizza Shop is your one-stop shop for tonight's dinner. Now enjoy the episode. So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Easy Conversations. Thanks a lot to everybody who listened to the last episode featuring the homie Matt and I. Hope you enjoyed listening to us give our breakdown of the spring season that we are now in. So now for episode 133 of Easy Conversations. I'm extremely excited, of course, to be back in the studio virtually with the homie Matt. So what's up, the people?
What's going on, everybody? Hope you're having a great time right now. Hope you're excited for today's episode. We're going to be talking about a topic that is near and dear to my heart and yours too, I'm guessing, Eric. So Eric, why don't you tell the people what we're going to be talking about today on the episode?
Yeah, so for this one, we're going to be going over a genre of film and television that's been quite popular for many reasons that we're going to get into in this episode. So that would be the war genre. There's a plethora of shows and movies that have touched on this. I would say, the most intense period of humanity, really. Like whenever we're into these situations in life, it's the darkest side of humanity, and the movies and TV shows that touch on this are the most intense, I would say, because they're so, for the most part, grounded in reality and, like I said, the darkest parts of it all. So that being said, there's a lot of great, obviously, war movies and TV shows that are tales of heroism, camaraderie, brotherhood, sisterhood, all of that. So we're going to get into all that by touching on different movies, TV shows. Getting into the Masters of the Air show as well that aired on Apple TV Plus earlier this year. So fear not if you have not seen this show. We're only going to be getting into that later in the program, so stick along for the ride. I'm sure you've seen a war movie here and there, and there'll be stuff to pick up on as we go along. So I think that's a good place to start. Matt, I've given a lot of opening thoughts there. What do you think it is that makes the war movie and TV show genre so popular for the masses?
I think it's popular because there's a form of we put ourselves in their shoes, and we wish we could be like heroes, like the ones portrayed in war movies. Like there's a sort of fantasy of how would we react in those situations, and would we step up to the plate and perform these heroic deeds? And that's personally for me how I feel like when watching them. I'm like, I can't, I put myself in that place, and I'm like, how are these guys even doing this right now? It's unbelievable. We're talking about war movies, but really the 20th century was filled with carnage and war, and there's a lot of photographs, videos of those wars. So strictly sticking to those, that's the most documented wars we've ever had. And I think we have so many accounts on real, so many biographies on the men that fought in the war. So we get real hand accounts of what happened. And what I find cool about the genre, the TV shows and the movies, is it's a lot of it's based on real life deeds and people, unlike a lot of other movie genres. So that just sends shivers down my spine when I think about what those men and women did. It's crazy, really. And yeah, there's not an ounce of comedy normally in war movies or shows, but it's the heroic actions and the spine tingling, this actually happened and these guys did this. Sure, do they ham it up for the movies and TV shows? Of course, they exaggerate, but just knowing that our ancestors fought in these wars is crazy, and it makes it very compelling to watch, right, Eric? I'm really into the story. I love history. I studied history in university. It's just cool to see it portrayed, through the medium of TV and film. Question for you. Do you, when we were going to do a pod on war, were you, strictly going to tackle 20th century warfare, the advent of mechanized warfare and all that? Or were you encompassing more, Civil War era, Napoleon? I was more, going to concentrate on the 20th century. How about you?
I'm a massive Napoleon head, so I would have liked to touch on that. I'm just kidding. When I think war, honestly, like, with a genre in general, it's like I'm thinking World War One, World War Two, maybe the Vietnam War a bit, but at that I'm not very well versed in it. Even the Cold War, like, it's not really what comes into mind. It's World War One and Two are the ones I think of. And
yeah,
that's actually something that when we get into our listener submissions, a lot of people did submit those, like, earlier, even Roman Empire movies that cover though, like, war is not exclusive to those few ones that I've listed, and even the ones that you listed earlier. For me, like, I mostly think of that time, and it's the most, for some reason, interesting to see, or the one I want to see on the screen more, maybe because of the scale. Like, it's World War, and the implication that it could, the biggest what if of all time is, what if the Allies had not won in World War II? Like, that's not really something I think about ever, but just talking it out right now, like, those are the biggest ones that had the most at stake. And it's such a different time to where, like you said, there's the start of the mechanized revolution, I guess, or the technology is so, it was revolutionary at the time, but when you look at it now, it's like so old school. Like, I'm watching the Pacific right now. I would have liked to have it finished by the time we did this, but just seeing those guns, and there's something like oddly satisfying to watch that on the screen. If you know what I mean, about like just seeing how old school it was, like the guns nowadays are completely, it's all like fully automatic, and
right,
you know what I mean. So that's the kind of war content that I like to see. And even at that, saying I like to see these war movies, it's like you said, I just want to touch on the two points that you made. One, thinking of putting yourself in that situation, I don't think I'd have what it takes to be like that kind of soldier to go out. I feel like I'd be terrified in battle. Obviously, I understand these people are trained and you pass tests, you prepare for this, but I can't imagine storming the beaches of Normandy, just being in a trench. You're just shivering in the mud, holding onto your rifle, hearing all the gunshots going off. You pop your head and you could get killed that very instant. I don't know how these people did it, honestly. Like, it looks terrible. And that's why I like when they touch on the traumatic side of it, too. Like, you're seeing people yelling in the middle of the night, like, wanting to go home, terrified of what's out there. It's completely understandable, and, like, it changes your life forever after those hardships, right? So I'm glad, like, those shows and movies really get into the long-term effects, and even seeing it in the short term. And then for the comedy was the other thing. I feel like there's a reason there's no comedy, because how can you be cracking jokes in this setting, right? Yeah. Like, you definitely still see it in these movies where, like, in Fury, for example, you got the camaraderie of the enclosed setting, all in the tank, just shooting the shit, chirping each other, like, trying to make the best of the situation. But how can you really, when you could die, like I said, anytime, bomb could go off, and so I feel like that's why we don't really see much humor. And when, if there's too much humor in these shows or movies, it might seem like out of place kind of thing.
No, that's, you said a lot of great things, Eric. The only humor we see is like the soldiers trying to stay, like, keep their morale up, you know, and they're just, yeah, like them shooting the shit after like a bombing mission in Masters of the Air. The Ancient Warfare, I'm glad some of our listeners submitted that. We're going to give you guys like a soft top five of our favorite war movies, and I excluded anything older than, I stuck to like the 20th century, but I was thinking of all these old movies that are great, so I can't wait to hear what the listeners submitted for that. World War One, World War Two. That's when like we realize like how to kill people the most effectively with like the machine guns and all that. Like, the carnage is just amplified, and like I said, it's so represented in movies and TV because we have so much accounts. Like, we still have World War II veterans alive with us to like tell us, like, it's not that far gone. Like, we still have people that were there, so that's why it's so relevant. It poses the question, in 100 years, are we going to even see content from World War One, World War Two? I don't know. People might not be as interested, right? Because all those generations alive will have passed, and the children will have passed. Like, we won't be around, right, in 100 years, so unless you invent some sort of technology. But there's different types of war movies, too, Eric. I don't know if how you did your list, but, like, I excluded any sort of, like, Holocaust movie or movies set during the war but that are more drama focused or action, or more drama focused or character pieces. Like, I stuck more to like I want to see operations and like warfare, gunplay, more like a military level as opposed to like a super sad Holocaust movie, because there's some fantastic movies set during World War II about the atrocities and horror, but those are like very, that's a different level of heavy movie, right? So I don't know, did you consider those for making your top five, Eric?
Yeah, no, I probably went about it the same way as you. I feel like we're going to have a bit of overlap, maybe in one or two picks. Yeah, maybe. No, I didn't choose anything that was kind of just set in the setting or context of World War II, World War I or II. Kind of like Oppenheimer, for example, right? Like, that takes place during
right.
World War II, but it's not a war movie, per se.
Yeah.
It's the actions of Oppenheimer and at Los Alamos like directly impacted and influenced what happened in the war. No, I did not consider any of those, like Godzilla minus one either. Like, obviously I did not take that one into consideration either, but went for the boots on the ground really. And that's what you want to see right in those movies. Like you said, like there's normally good action in those kind of movies and deeds of heroism. There's a good list to choose from, but also in making my list, I also realized that I haven't seen that many war movies, let alone more than once. There's maybe two of the movies on my list that I've seen more than once. Everything else is a one-time watch. I feel like there's also a reason for that, and I was kind of getting into that earlier. Is like, these are tough movies to watch, right? Like, no one really wants to just go on a bender of watching war movies, right? Like, it is interesting, and it gives you perspective on how lucky we are and everything, and it's cool to a certain degree to see what they've done, but it's intense, it's tragic, and like you touched on, like, especially the very brutal aspects of war, like, those aren't really movies that I like to mix into rotation often. Like, The Boy in the Striped Pajamas, that movie, or maybe it's The Boy with the Striped Pajamas, heartbreaking movie. Seen it once, we'll never watch it again. Zone of Interest is probably in that same category for you, I would assume. Like, you watch it once, but it's not one that you want to keep running back. And that's kind of interesting too, that for some of these, like, there is one movie on my list that I would run back often because it has like other aspects in there as well. But I'll get into that when we get in the list. There's a few more things I'd like to touch on for war movies. Another thing I find that they have in a lot of them that can add another nice layer is, like, there's normally like a sort of love story in there as well that gives you like an escape from just the hardship and what these men and women were fighting for is something back home or someone they meet. There's normally like the wounded soldier meets nurse trope, I feel like, too, or you get shot down in Amsterdam. The farmer's daughter's there just, again, nursing to help. But anyways, so there's that in there. And also, just like we see in Master of the Air that we can get into too, just the like the vices that the soldiers fall into of, like, maybe they have someone back home, but it's such a crazy world out there. You don't know what's going to happen, like, if this stays your last. And then they meet someone new in London and need an escape. So it's a completely different state of mind that you're in, and you're not thinking straight, not enough oxygen to the brain at times, but it's there and it was real. So
we'll come back to what Crosby does in during his leave of absence. Like, that's a dilemma right there, but anyways, we'll come back to that. You're talking about like the war movie tropes. There's so many of them. War movies made after the war, the closer you get to the war, the movies tend to be very patriotic, morale boosting, almost like super unrealistic. Like, I'm talking about every John Wayne war movie, or every like just go full out American just to boost like people joining the military. Hell, like, look, Top Gun, that boosted U.S. Air Force recruitment. But the tropes that I like, what we see with a lot of American war movies is the Americans are the good guys. They do nothing wrong. They don't necessarily show any war atrocities committed by the Americans. Some movies they do, and I'll get into that because I have a couple on my list. But, like, we're always portrayed as, like, the good guys. Like, we're doing the right thing. We're fighting evil, which they were. But some war movies, they kind of show both sides. And the closer, there's been a lot of good movies out in the last 20, 30 years that shows like both sides of the war, or German perspective, All Quiet on the Western Front, or Russian perspective, which I have a couple of those movies that I'll be saying later. But like the war genres really evolved. Like, not just the Americans are the good guys that save everybody's ass, but now, like, we're seeing the whole picture of things, you know? Like, the Russians did a lot. Like, they got to Berlin before the Americans. They took down the Nazis on the Eastern Front, which was way more brutal than anything on the Western Front. There's a lot of atrocities, and the Russians and Germans detested each other. It was, like, very bad. A lot of other tropes would be, like, we're seeing it less and less now, but back then, like, the American soldiers, like, not being invincible, but, like, you know, less carnage on the American side than the opposing side. That happens a lot in old black and white war movies. I don't know about you, Eric, but I was very conflicted making my list. I could have went super old school with it, like older classics. I could have went with just like these foreign war movies that have been popping up in the last 20 years that are very good. I could have went just all strictly American. Like, there's a lot to choose from. If you look at a master list of war movies that have come out in the last, like, since World War One, there's a lot to choose from. And the genres evolved beautifully. More realistically, I think. Like, think of 1917, right? The World War One movie. Like, that looked like you were right in the trenches. One long take, showing the horrors on both sides. Like, that movie was beautiful. That's not on my list, spoiler, but, like, you see, like, I'm glad that even after 100 years, we can still make movies on World War One, and the genres evolved beautifully. Did you have any struggle, Eric, picking, like, I guess you went with the decades that you the movies you've watched, which, yeah, I'm guessing is like me, right? Like 90s, 2000s.
Yeah, no, there was definitely a struggle to make my list in that I didn't have enough movies to pick. That's what I was saying earlier. Like, I feel like I've seen movies, but only once, and a lot of them in like grade 10 history when we're wheeling in the TV on the four-wheeled thing or whatever it's called.
Yeah, yeah. And best time of the day. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then watching the movie in 3-4 sittings, or a substitute teacher comes in, throw a movie in there. I don't really remember them all. Like The Aviator is that with James Franco or is it with Leonardo DiCaprio? I forget. Flyboys. That was a classic.
That's so, Franco.
Franco. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had like a solid three locked in. It was really rounding out the 4-5. That was a bit trickier. And I will say right now, like, one pick on my list might be a bit disingenuous because, like I said, I've only seen it the one time a long time ago. And I feel like we can just get into the list at this point. Like, whatever else we're missing to talk about will just come up in conversation. I can us off with my list. And number 5, again, seen it once, not that long ago, really, really enjoyed it. And it gave you a different perspective on the war from more of a medical point of view. Hacksaw Ridge, Andrew Garfield, I want to say Vince Vaughn, Amy Adams, possibly. Was she the lead actress?
Teresa Palmer was his love interest.
Right. Close. So, great movie. I remember watching it. Like, this was a while back there, but just really being captivated by, like, the different perspective of, like, a more of a peaceful soldier, if I'm remembering correctly. Like, Garfield was not he was more of a pacifist. And correct me if I'm wrong, I want to say he also helped out wounded on the other side as well. So that's where I'm hoping you can maybe chime in to help out wherever I'm missing any gaps here. But regardless, I remember just being very surprised at this different kind of war movie where it's not focused on the killing and the... But it is, but in a different sense. You know what I mean? It's more of the let's nurse our wounded back to health and participate, but not in the traditional way when you're thinking about war. Hacksaw Ridge, fantastic movie. Strong recommend if you haven't seen it. I got to run it back because I can barely describe it. So I thought Amy Adams was in it, for God's sake. So Matt, any thoughts on Hacksaw?
I love Hacksaw Ridge, Eric. Great pick. It did not make my list. It almost did, but... I just missed the cut. I love that movie. Yeah, Andrew Garfield, stubbornly a pacifist, like, doesn't budge from his... He will die on his hill about the fact that he will not carry a rifle or a sidearm. Like, he wants to be a medic. He's like, why do I... Like, I can help out like that. And what he does in the movie, his act of heroism, is truly extraordinary, recovering all those dead bodies recovering all his wounded comrades at the end. it's cool that you're watching the Pacific right now, because Hacksaw Ridge is about the Pacific War Warfront and how brutal it was, and they're taking islands. They're the U.S. are doing an island hopping strategy, and sometimes the islands are just the sizes of like football fields, if not a little bigger, just big enough for an airfield. So they have to conquer them all, and the loss of manpower just to conquer a tiny patch of land is excruciating. See Iwo Jima, Okinawa, all those islands. And in the Pacific, it's like the in Hacksaw Ridge, it's almost like the end of the tail end of the war, but the Japanese are still fighting strong because they're very stubborn and prideful, and you know, they have their shogun samurai roots, and they'll fight to the death, basically. Great movie. The action scene's superbly well done. It's a Mel Gibson movie, actually. He directed it. He does action scenes. He knows how to do carnage. See Braveheart, The Patriot, Passion of Christ. He knows how to up the gore, you know. So great pick, Eric. Hacksaw Ridge. Yeah, good stuff. My number five, this is my only pretentious pick on my list. It's a foreign movie. I could have went with a lot more foreign films, but that would have just been like film snobby. Like, they're not actually my favorite. I pick the movies I rewatch the most. This one I've seen 3 times. I remember renting it at Blockbuster because my dad told me it was really good. This is a German submarine movie called Das Boot, directed by Wolfgang Petersen, who went on to have a Hollywood career, actually. A very successful career after this German movie he made. This movie takes place mostly in a submarine, German crew, German captain, everything. This is the most claustrophobic and best submarine movie ever made, in terms of showing the life of a submarine crew and the dangers, and you know, them hunting destroyers and then destroyers hunting them with their depth charges, you know, and being super quiet. Like every great submarine movie has stolen from Das Boot, which came out in the 80s. It's just a fantastic movie. It's long as shit. It's like over 3 hours long, but man, is it a journey. You sit down, like you just get transported into the world of being in a German U-boat. And feeling like they can't, like there's dangers everywhere for them. And it feels, yeah, you're cheering for the Germans, but you know, they make them sympathetic. They're not like bad people. You know, they're part of the German Navy. They have families, children, and they're just trying to get home and survive. So my number five is Das Boot. Great, great submarine movie.
Never seen it. Obviously, I know the expression Das Boot. For me and my friends, that meant if you skunked someone at beer pong, you had to drink a beer out of a boot. Like, it's no word of a lie. So I feel like I gotta mix this movie. I feel like you've also brought it up on the pod before. I remember you talking about it. So love to see that it's on the list. And you know, you need a good pretentious German movie on every list every now and then. So
right,
sure to mix that in there for sure. Number four for me, again, this is where like the disingenuousness of my picks is going to stop. Only seen this movie once, and this I know for sure was in high school. We watched it in a few sittings. Saving Private Ryan, I know considered to be like probably one of the GOAT war movies. If anything, probably more on the mainstream side of things. When people think like war movie, like, oh yeah, Saving Private Ryan, the best movie. I wasn't even going to have it on my list, to be honest. I had another honorable mention that I'll say after. But I didn't have others that I really truly could say, like, I've seen these movies and will need to have this above it. Because this is kind of more your traditional, like, action war movie where you got your acts of heroism with, like you said, are probably exaggerated or Hollywoodized for the purpose of a feature film, 2 hour range. But like I said, haven't seen it in so long that I'm truly due for a rewatch. And I feel like the reason I'm including it too is that I feel like if I were to watch it tomorrow, it would be on my list. So throwing it up there, SPR. Any thoughts, Matt?
This one just missed my list too. Like, it was on the cusp. I love this movie too, though. I've seen it a bunch of times. I remember renting it and being like horrified by the Omaha Beach scene. First like half hour is pure carnage. I mean, this movie's been talked to death. There's so many good like actors that get their start in the movie. Tom Hanks is perfect. The set pieces, like the whole movie is like a journey to save Matt Damon, and like moving from one good set piece to another. Like, there's no boring scenes in this movie. Haven't seen it in a while, but I've watched it a bunch of times when I was younger. And yeah, great pick, Eric. Solid. I mean, you've seen it once, but you remember it because it's so, it leaves such an impression, right? So good stuff. My number four is a war movie I've seen a million times because I'd rent it all the time at Blockbuster. Another one my dad introduced me to. I don't know if you may have seen it though. It's from like early 2000. It's called Enemy at the Gates with Jude Law and Ed Harris. It's about the Russians. Jude Law plays a Russian sniper who gets quite good. Like, he's very good. He realizes he's got a talent for the rifle. So it follows him and his exploits, based on a real person, of course, who's like, he's just sharpshooting all these German officers, like, at Stalingrad. The setting of this movie is the Battle of Stalingrad, which was arguably the most pivotal battle on the Eastern Front, changed the tides. Like, the Russians, after that battle, started their offensive after, you know, they stopped retreating. That's as far as Hitler got in the lower part of Russia. He didn't get to the oil fields like he wanted to. So it's a great movie. Now, Ed Harris is the antagonist. Ed Harris, phenomenal actor, right? Like, he plays a German sniper who's tasked to eliminate Jude Law. So you got a cat and mouse sniper game going on for over half the movie. Phenomenal movie. You got supporting cast like Ron Perlman, Rachel Weisz, who plays a love interest. There's a lot of cool actors, and they're all playing Russians, but they speak in English, you know, with their British accent or whatever. But doesn't matter. It's a great war movie. Enemy at the Gates, Battle of Stalingrad. You should check it out, Eric.
Well, that's assuming, you're assuming that I haven't seen this. I actually have. That's another high school movie. Oh! That was another one that I remember specifically. Nice. That was the sniper movie in like grade 10. Again, I swear my grade 10 history teacher just loved throwing these movies on there. It was a classic. I remember that was one, like, the boys were just hyped up watching this movie. Like, it was electric. I have vague recollection of specific sniper scenes, but again, story-wise and, like, how it ends, I do not remember. But I remember it was a electric factory at Garneau's second-floor pavillon class. Good times. Now, that's probably one to run back for sure. Nice, good pick.
Sweet.
So I feel like there's most of these movies for me anyways are like, I've seen a lot of them in through school. And the next one I'm going to say for my number three is one I've seen multiple times. I think I've seen this one three times. And it was all in the context of an English film literature class that I took at Keele University in the United Kingdom. So our project was to watch a movie and then make a comparative analysis to a work of literature to that movie. So for me, this movie was Apocalypse Now that I made a comparison to Paradise Lost, which is a John Milton classic prose literature. I would cite that work in like every essay where I needed like five sources, like Paradise Lost, throw it in there, like throw a couple of sentences from it. It always applied. That's a cheat code right there. So, Apocalypse Now, though, amazing movie, and I've seen multiple versions of it, like the extended, the super extended cuts, director's cut, all of it there. Long movie, very cool, visually looking, great looking movie, with starring Martin Sheen, who I had never really seen in his younger days. Like, he's like quite young. This is from the 60s, this movie. So, he looks like Charlie Sheen, like to a T. Yeah. And he's... Yeah. Going through the jungle in Vietnam, and so it's the Vietnam War era, and he's going, his end game is to meet a lieutenant or Colonel Kurtz at the end, who's been kind of taken in by some, I forget, their Mayan society, and this is the one I've seen most recently, I should know, and I wrote an essay on this, but it's just like a really psychedelic, trippy journey where an officer has orders to, I think, kill the colonel, but then he ends up getting brainwashed. Like, there's a lot of brainwashing and questioning why they're in the Vietnam. The movie is kind of an allegory for the Vietnam War. Like, why are we here? We shouldn't be participating in this war, all that. So a lot of themes and symbolism in this movie, but also great action scenes too, great acting, haunting performance by Marlon Brando, and great dialogue. I always remember the song by Prince, or no, Jimi Hendrix. Do you remember what it's called? There's a song that plays in the movie. It's a classic.
Yeah, no, I I mean, I can name you some songs, but it's been a while.
Everyone's heard this song before. I'm thinking Smoke
Purple
on
Haze,
the Water.
Voodoo
yeah, Purple
Child.
Haze, Purple Haze, that's it. Like, that plays in there, a classic scene. Anyways, Apocalypse Now, that's my number three pick. Great movie if you haven't seen it, check it out. It's a long one as well, 3 hours.
As are most war movies, but great pick, Eric. This would have made my top 10. This movie is 10 out of 10, in my opinion. It's a classic in every sense of the word. I've only seen it twice from start to finish, though. I wasn't comfortable, like, putting it in my top five. You said it best, though. You said, like, it's a psychedelic journey or trip. This is the perfect movie to throw on if you can't sleep, and you're throwing it on after midnight, and you're just letting it, like, you're just letting it take you on this journey of... This movie makes you question everything. Like, it's not just a war movie. It's like a character study, an allegory, like you said. It's the perfect movie to just, you let it get taken away by it and escape into the movie, and you'll not, sure, there's some slower parts, but, like, overall, the journey, the adventure is great. And then when he gets to his destination to the renegade Colonel Kurtz, it's just like gets even more like, what the hell is going on? And yes, it does get like, I don't even remember the ending, to be honest. I just remember it being like a lot of like silent montages of like, not a lot of dialogue, basically. Very artsy movie, too. Who can forget, too, the Flight of the Valkyries, the Rite of the Valkyries song, the musical piece with them bombing this, as they're bombing the city, or Robert Duvall with his infamous line, I love the smell of napalm in the morning. That's, like, in the top 10 most quotable lines ever, if you Google that. Great pick, Eric.
Great pick. You've seen inspiration, like, you've seen clips of other movies that drew inspiration directly from Apocalypse Now too, like the flight right of the Valkyries, like you said, like that shot of the orange sky and all the choppers, like that's from Apocalypse Now. I've seen it, and I think of Kong Skull Island right away, like a direct rip from Apocalypse Now. Anyways, that was it. A lot of it's an inspirational movie that a lot of other filmmakers drew from.
Yeah, well said, Eric. My next, it's funny that you had a Martin Sheen movie, because my next movie stars Charlie Sheen and is a Vietnam War movie. My number three is Platoon from 1986, won Best Picture in 86, fun fact. Oliver Stone directed, wrote it. The reason it's so high up on my list is the performances of Willem Dafoe, the legend, the super underrated still to this day, even though he's in every movie every year. Willem Dafoe is a phenomenal actor. Performances of Willem Dafoe and Tom Berenger as the two sergeants, the good guy, the good sergeant and the bad sergeant, just makes the movie, it's so amazing. Like, you get the good and evil in the same platoon, same squadron, and Charlie Sheen, who's green, like, he just showed up. He's experiencing, like, the two sides. And this movie does a great job of showing the atrocities of the Vietnam War, even the ones committed by the Americans. There's a couple scenes with the American GIs, and they're like going crazy, like they're executing civilians. The war scenes are amazing. The fight scenes are amazing. It's got that score. Actually, the score is, they played in a Seinfeld episode, the one where Mr. Costanza has the Vietnam flashback where he poisons everybody. That's the platoon score, basically, the strings. Like, that's a very famous score from Platoon, and they play throughout the movie, and it just elevates the movie. There's the famous Willem Dafoe when he's like on his knees with his hands up in the air. That's the movie poster. That's an iconic scene. Yeah, I love Platoon. I've seen it a bunch of times. It you really feel like you're in the jungle, in the heat with the bugs. It's very uncomfortable to watch. The Sheens know how to make good war movies, or be in good war movies. So Platoon, my number three.
Nice. So that's a movie, again, like, I feel like I just have a recollection for all of these movies. I did watch when we had rented a cottage in 2008, my family and another friend's family, and we threw it on at night. So 2008, I was 14. Everyone else was younger than me. So I don't think we finished the movie, and or we were all terrified of this movie. Like, I specifically remember us throwing it on and not finishing it. So Platoon I've not seen from start to finish, and if anything, I have bad memories about it, but I feel like it's one that I'm kind of due now to rip back, and it's a classic, right? So gotta let that one, give it another shot for sure. And just while we're on the topic, because I don't know if your other two movies are going to touch on this, mine won't. So I love the jungle setting for war movies. Like, that's what I'm liking a lot in the Pacific and in anything Vietnam War. I think it's just a very cool, scary, mysterious setting for this war. Like, you don't know what's going to pop out. The jungle itself is a character too, right? Like, it can wound you with the animals, the insects that live in it, the poison. It's a known thing in literature and film where if you go through like a jungle, you're going to go through a psychedelic journey. It even leads to you like getting into a cave where you make a discovery about yourself. Like, I'm sure there's something along those lines in Platoon where you're saying his character starts off as green and then his journey leads to some sort of transformation. The hero's journey, as it's known. So I always like seeing that. And there's often a lot of rain too. Like, a few Pacific episodes have a lot of rain and stuff, and you feel for them like in the mud and all that. It's a cool setting, all that. So, no, great pick. Number two, I had it as my number one until I made a last minute switcheroo because I remembered this other movie that would fit the bill here. So I've talked about already a 2014 banger, Fury. Just a classic, a new age classic war movie in my books. It's 10 years old this year. All-star cast, Brad Pitt, John Bernthal, Shia LaBeouf, Michael Peña, the guy who's in Percy Jackson and the Sea of Monsters. I think something Lemon.
Logan.
Yeah. Logan
Lerman. Logan Lerman, yeah.
Close enough. Yeah. But yeah, what I love about Fury is it's kind of like your Das Boot above ground. It's boots on the ground. You got the enclosed setting of the tank and this guy, the Lemon Man, he's joining this crew. He's green, right? Like, he's baby-faced killer. And he's joining this hardened group of big personalities, maybe seasoned vets in war. Is learning from them, is kind of initiated too. Like, they're a bit hard on him. They're cracking jokes, busting his balls, you know, as you do in this war-like setting. And this one has a lot of humor. I feel like John Bernthal plays, again, a classic secondary supporting role. Always nails those performances. But Brad Pitt, Brad Pitt is the man. Like, he's the leader. He's the one that our characters all kind of look to for guidance and learn from. He has a mentor figure. Great action in it too. And as always in war movies, tragic. So yeah, no, Fury is my number two pick. Was almost my favorite war movie. I've seen it like three times, I'd say. It's a classic in my books.
So Fury's your number two. Well, it's also my number two. Let's no go. Joke. Fury, I have Fury at number two. I could not exclude this movie. Yes, it's only 10 years old and maybe it has to age more, but I've seen it so many times, like four or five times now. It gets better every time I watch it. I remember seeing it at the theater, but then loving it even more when I bought it on Blu-ray. So great pick, Eric. I had to put it high up on my list. Yes, it's like Masters of the Air showing us the ins and outs of the B-17's Flying Fortress. This shows us the Sherman tank, like the five-man crew in there, six-man crew. Like, it's amazing. Like, it's brutal. Like, I'm just thinking of the scene where they're just like casually like in their tank line and they get like ambushed and like one tank gets like lit on fire or something. Like, and it's like so sudden. That's what really hit me. Everything's so sudden in this movie. It's not like, doesn't glorify anything. You know, you're alive 1 minute, then you're dead the next super fast. The last stand at the end of the movie, you know, we're at the crossroads. That was epic. And I love a good, like, it's maybe a little Hollywoodized, but like the final, like everyone's last stand and they're dying and like one last take out as many people as you can. Like that, I'm a sucker for scenes like that, Eric. You know, like kind of like a Leonidas in 300, you know, like going down. We're going to take as many of them with us. Like, they do that really well in Fury, and it's sad. It's every time I watch it, I'm very saddened by the end, and because not a lot of them make it, actually. I'm pretty sure most people have watched Fury, but great pick. I mean, it's my number two as well, so yeah.
And also,
I'm curious to see what your number. Yeah.
Just before we get off the topic, tanks have got to be the coolest. Like, that's a first overall pick in terms of like artillery and like like armored vehicles. That's the one seed every time. Tanks are just sick.
Oh yeah.
So it had to be said. I feel like I'm going back to back here. Brad Pitt movies Inglourious Basterds. Oh. No questions asked in my books. Like, I love Fury. And this is definitely not your traditional war movie. It's a fantasy. It's a revisionist history fantasy war movie. But it's still, in my books, it still fits where we're working in World War II, Nazi-occupied Germany, different accounts of the oppressed groups during World War II, like from the Jewish perspective, the Nazi-occupied France. You're getting a bit of Tarantino loves to do this. His love of cinema goes in there. And then again, like I've mentioned already, the kind of revisionist history, or like the modified historical events, like how what happens with Hitler in the movie, right? Like that's obviously and like he did in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood with the
that's right,
like Helter Skelter and all that there. So hilarious movie, one of my favorites of Tarantino. It's so hard to actually do like a top three, but Inglourious Basterds in my books gets as close as it gets to top three. It's a lot of people have it as number one. Me, it's up there. I find it gets better every time. Very funny. You got amazing performances across the board. Brad Pitt, again, hysterical in this. Very different character than he is in Fury. But again, still a leader of men. You got there's iconic Michael Fassbender scene, like his chapter in the movie basically is all-time tension and writing up a scene, right? And then Colonel Hans Landa as well, one of the GOAT villains. If you like do a draft of villains, he's definitely one you're not sleeping on for sure. Christoph Waltz, his best performance, I would say. Dr. King Schultz nipping at the heels just a bit, I would say, but I think he edges it out here. Everything, like Shoshana, love how she comes into the mix from the beginning. All of it. Again, also one of the best opening scenes to a movie of all time, my books. Like, you talk about tension. I don't know what else to say, really. Inglourious Basterds, maybe not what you're expecting, but had to be mentioned. That's number one.
Well, that's a phenomenal pick, Eric. I mean, we could spend the whole rest of the podcast discussing Inglourious Basterds. That's how much meat there is on this movie to talk. Like, it would make my list, but I just didn't include it as, like, missing some, like, carnage scenes, like action. Like, I went with more like traditional realistic, more like traditional war movies. Yeah. This is alternative history a little bit at the end, not a little bit, a lot. But in terms of filmmaking, like, this movie is better than most movies on my list. Like, I like this movie more than all the movies on my list, actually. I just didn't include it in my criteria. I had to exclude movies like Schindler's List and like movies like that I love even more, but I just stuck to more like on the ground level. Great pick though, Eric. Melanie Laurent, Diane Kruger, the two females, like amazing. What's his face? Baron Zemo, you know. Daniel Brühl.
Nice.
Daniel Brühl. He's great in it as Frederick Zola, the sniper who. Legendary sniper. Like, that's all good.
Enemy at the Gates.
Great pick. Right? No, it's a great movie. Good pick. Now, I have to apologize for my number one, Eric. I blatantly lied to you that Saving Private Ryan was not on my list. It is indeed my number one. It had to be my number one because I've seen this movie the most, I think, out of any movie on my list. I remember renting it and rewatching it a bunch of times. Dissecting the Omaha Beach sequence, like rewatching that scene a lot, because you know when you rent a movie you're gonna watch it a bunch of times because you got to return in 4 days or whatever. I'm thinking of all like the memorable moments in the movie that hit me hard, like Giovanni Ribisi's medic character when he takes the bullet, like just a random stray bullet when they're taking an outpost, bleeds out, and like all the guys are comforting him and saying like it's gonna be okay, give him, and then realizing like he's not gonna make it and they just shoot him up with morphine so he doesn't feel anything and he passes away. Like, that was extremely sad, that scene. Or Vin Diesel's death scene where he's trying to help the French villagers and they're telling him like, no, let's go, leave them alone, and he gets shot. And it moves on from like set piece to set piece, intense scene to intense scene, and then the final showdown when they finally find Private Ryan in that little like abandoned French town and the Germans are rolling through and they do like a last stand type thing is amazing in my opinion. Very like heartbreaking moments, you know, the part of the crew going down and not many of them remaining by the end. And I love Saving Private Ryan. Is it a little Hollywood and cheesy, corny? Absolutely, but shows the horrors of war. It does a great job of depicting the horrors of war and great action scenes, you know, stuff we've seen later on in Band of Brothers, all like was inspired from Saving Private Ryan. I mean, it's Steven Spielberg, right? So he did both. This set the benchmark for like what a good war movie is. Saving Private Ryan influenced a million other movies and the way war movies were being done and the brutalness of them. So my number one is Saving Private Ryan by Steven Spielberg.
You definitely fooled me. I did not think it was going to be on your list after you said that it wasn't going to be on your list. I'm like, why would I think that it would be, right? So, no, good stuff. Like I said, I feel like I have to rewatch this now. I completely forgot that Vin Diesel was in this. I mean, it's my number four, though. But, yeah, no, great stuff, Matt. Love that. I mean, like you said, and like we've both said, it's a Hollywoodized one, but I feel like that's part of the appeal is that we don't always want to watch these extremely realistic horror there you go, you got me now with the horror movies, because they are horror movies in a certain sense, right?
Yeah,
it's the ultimate horror, it's the most realistic horror there is. So
it's, I agree, yeah,
because we don't want to see like exactly how it went down because of how brutal it was. Like, you kind of need some like a light heart, maybe a light war movie in a sense where yes, it is graphic, it's violent, but it's ultimately easier to digest, uplifting, and you get your tales of heroism that everyone wants in these kind of movies. So like you said earlier, like the kind of movies that they wanted back in the day was the American patriotism, where they're invincible for the most part, except for Vin Diesel apparently, and that everyone's all good. So I feel like that's where a lot of the appeal of Saving Private Ryan comes from, and people tend to seek those out more than your extremely realistic one, but that's depressing as shit. You know what I mean? So
good stuff.
Great.
I'm curious. I know we got a lot of submissions, so do we want to rifle those?
See what you did there. So yeah, no, we got a lot of submissions. So the first one was from my friend Melissa Chu. She said Greyhound with Tom Hanks was pretty good. So I don't know if she's saying like it's the best movie of all time, like for war, but Greyhound was a submission. So one that we haven't touched on. I've never seen Greyhound. Have you, Matt?
No, I have not, actually. Now I'm very curious about it. Never seen this.
Okay, so yeah.
Greyhound.
I have to check. I've seen it. I feel like it's either an Apple movie or it was on Apple, because I think Tom Hanks is kind of like their lead spokesperson on there. So check that out. Thanks, Melissa. Next one is from multiple time recurring guest Bassam Issa. He said he's riding with us with a number two pick, Fury with my man Shia. So great pick. Obviously, you don't need to elaborate. The next ones were from the homie Will Coleman. He said, gotta be Saving Private Ryan. So that's number one. Honorable mentions are Dunkirk, 1917, and All Quiet on the Western Front, which, to be honest, I was expecting All Quiet on the Western Front to be on your list. That's what I thought you were going to have in there.
Yeah, those are all great films that he mentioned. I just haven't seen the movie as much as the ones on my list. That's all. Like, I've only seen that movie once, right?
Gotcha.
It's too new.
So, no, I've seen all these. Actually, I've not seen All Quiet on the Western Front, so I feel like I got to get on that one. I remember it was on your 2022 list, I believe, so gotta get on that.
Yeah.
So thanks, Will. The next one is from the homie Daniel Rolock. He said Dunkirk as well. So back-to-back Dunkirks. Hey, you know, you're entitled to your own opinion. I did not like Dunkirk. I'll just say that right now. Like the storytelling, I found like it just didn't do it for me. The cuts between the past and the present, and it was just missing something for me. I found that it was like, despite it being a very short movie, was not that captivated. I'm sorry.
I gotta be honest. Yeah. And I agree with you, Eric. I echo what you're saying. I mean, we talked about Nolan's movies, so you can go listen to that. But yeah, we weren't as impressed with Dunkirk as most people were. So yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for the submission, Daniel and Will. I'm looping you both here and like not just exclusively taking shots at one person. It's a double two pack here. So the next one is from the homie Riley Finnessy. He submitted, we touched on it earlier, 1917. Again, wasn't sure if this would be on your list too. I enjoyed it. I saw it in theaters with Zach back in the day. I thought it was solid. Might be due for a rewatch on that one, but thought it was good.
Yeah, I loved it too at the theater, and I haven't rewatched it since, but I thought it was a great movie.
Yeah, thanks, Riley. Next one was from the homie Ron Antoine. Oh, he submitted G.I. Jane as his pick. So
yeah,
it's
a good movie.
Yeah, okay, I've not seen it. Yeah,
it's a Ridley Scott movie with Demi Moore and Viggo Mortensen. It's really good. It's like like Gulf War. She's a G.I. and she's being like, she's pretty badass in the movie. Actually, it's a good movie. It's a really good movie.
Okay, right on. So thanks, Ron.
Yeah.
The next one is from the homie Curtis Daigle. Another one, Matt, that made your list. Enemy at the Gates, best sniper movie is his exact quote with it. So as soon as you said Enemy at the Gates, I was like, let's go. You're going to love this Curtis pick.
Nice. Great pick, Curtis. I agree with you. There's not a lot of sniper movies, but this is the best one.
So, yeah, thanks, Curtis. Next one is from the homie Sam Labby. He also said Fury, so great pick again, Sam. Two from my brother, Zach. So he said Gladiator and Troy.
Mm.
So I got back to him saying, like, we're kind of looking at more your traditional war, like the war movies that we've touched on in this episode, right? But I also think that those are not invalid submissions where different kind, especially Troy, I would say, is definitely a war movie. Gladiator, it's more you're looking at the Roman Colosseum culture. But Troy, it's a war movie. Of like the it's a war movie.
Trojan War,
So, great movie. Great movies. I love Gladiator. I've seen him way more times than Troy, but Troy I've seen a few times. Epic. It's a classic.
I love Gladiator, and I love Troy as well. And Troy's directed by Das Boot director Wolfgang Petersen, so there's the connection right there.
There we go.
Yeah.
Everything's just coming full circle. And
Brad Pitt, you know, like...
I'm looking for more traditional war movies. He said, I haven't watched any traditional war movies more than once, but I will say Fury is probably my favorite. So kind of on the same page as me here, where like these aren't movies I'm running back. Once I've seen them, it's kind of like that's it for the most part. But Fury is why I feel like Fury is the one that's come up the most now. I'm just doing the rundown. So thanks, Zach. Next one, Hip Hop Fiend 85, Brandon, recurring guest. He said, for me, it's between Apocalypse Now and Platoon. So I think both are number three picks, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah, for sure. Great picks, Brandon.
So he also said after that that war movies have kind of... I gotta admit, though, that the last war movie I watched was before 2008. The wife can't stand them, so I've been out of the game for a while. That's fair, honestly. If you sit down with the wife to watch a movie and, like, war movie's not the... like your movie you want to unwind with, completely understandable, I feel like.
Yeah.
So great picks, Brandon. And then the last one was from the homie Jeff Lavoie. He submitted, you mentioned it earlier, Leonidas 300. So another different era of war, but definitely a war movie. I'll admit, I've never seen 300. So I feel like that's a glaring omission on my part. It's revered as a cult classic. Zack Snyder fans want my head on a spike right now. They're rioting the streets that I haven't seen Rebel Moon either.
No, 300 is great, though. I saw it at the theater. I was blown away. We had never seen this type of CGI carnage, hyper unrealistic but still cool warfare based on actual events, loosely based on actual events. And they blend sci-fi, they blend fantasy really well in 300. Like, they have stuff that's so unrealistic, but who gives a shit? It actually, it works in the movie, and it, and Gerard is freaking badass. You even have Michael Fassbender in there, as well as David Wenham, a.k.a. Faramir, who's, like, looking more ripped than ever. There's 300's great. And Lena Headey, Cersei, as Leonidas's wife, she's great in it, too. And you got Dominic West as the McNulty from The Wire, as like a bad guy. So 300 super solid. You should check it out, Eric.
Cast. I was trying to think of Lena Headey's name. I had Cersei in my head. I was trying to jump in there, but you got it. So thanks. But no, that sounds. I know I got to run that one. I feel like Zack Snyder kind of got lost in the sauce. Like, the formula was great for 300, but then when you're seeing it 300 times in all his other movies, it kind of loses its appeal, right? So, but no, great,
it's true.
Great pick, Jeff. So yeah, that was it. A lot of submissions. Love it when you all come through with the picks. It's very appreciated. So now we went way longer than I thought we were going to be honest. We haven't even really gotten into Master of the Air, which kind of was what spawned this idea for the pod. But no panic, everybody. We're going to segue nicely into that right now. So latest war show that hit Apple TV, kind of a continuation of both HBO shows, Band of Brothers and The Pacific. Now we're having a look at the aerial warfare that happened during World War II. Very different kind of show to I've obviously seen Band of Brothers, not done Pacific, but I really enjoyed Master of the Air. I thought it was a great show to kick off the year, get into this genre. It follows that formula of you got your main kind of guys that you're following, but a lot of different crews that you're following for a few episodes, getting their stories, their struggles and ambitions in the war. Yeah, all roads though lead to our two main characters, which were Gale Clevin, aka Buck, and then I forget the guy's name, but let's just go with Bucky, played by Calum Turner and Austin Butler, respectively. And then you got Crosby and Rosie, like those are the other two main characters I'd say, but it's really, it's the Buck and Bucky show. And I'll just say right off the rip, an issue I have with all these war shows is too many characters. I have the hardest time remembering names, knowing who's who in the zoo out here. They made it very simple by choosing Buck and Bucky here. Like, there's no issue whatsoever. Maybe I was getting confused between the two for the first three episodes, but after that, after a while, I got it down. But yeah, no, great choice of characters to follow these two, the Bucks. And yeah, that's kind of what I wanted to open with. Too many characters, but for this, they kind of made it a little simpler. What did you think overall of I liked it a lot, to be honest. I'll just say that. What did you think of Master of the Air opening statements?
So overall, I really, really enjoyed the show. I loved it. Like, I liked it a lot. Does not reach the heights of Band of Brothers or The Pacific, in my opinion.
Agreed.
But Masters of the Air is a show where wasn't sure after episode one, wasn't sure after episode two. Every episode, to me, though, got better. I liked every, like, episode 9 was my favorite. Episode 8 was my second. Like, it culminated into a great ending, in my opinion. I thought it was a little on the weak side at first because of, like, we're thrown into with so many characters. Like, the first three episodes are very repetitive. Three bombing missions. We're getting carnage and seeing the life in the B-17's Flying Fortress plane. But, like, they're very repetitive. And then, like, episode 4, 5, 6 gets pretty intense and, like, even more carnage, and that's what I loved. And then, like, 7, 8, 9 closed that arc beautifully. I really enjoyed how they wrapped it up. John Egan is Calum Turner. He was my favorite, Eric. I'm not gonna lie. I thought Calum Turner outdid Austin Butler hard. Like, I thought Austin Butler was not on the strong side. Medium at most. Like, he was good, but he was nowhere. Like, Calum Turner did great, and Robert Rosenthal, I love that actor. He's a super quiet performance, but, like, you can read his face a lot of the times. He doesn't have to say it, you just read his expressions. And that guy in real life is a total badass. We'll get into that at the end. But my overall thoughts is I really liked it. I had a strong second half. I pretty much binged this, too. Like, I had the luxury of, like, I the last two episodes I watched yesterday, Eric, so, like, they're going to be fresher than in your head. But yeah, I wasn't sure at the start, right, with just Haast and Butler and Calum Turner. I wasn't sure. I'm like, okay, who are these two clowns and, like, what's going on? Crosby's throwing up every mission on as the navigator. I'm like, who is this clown in the plane right now? And I don't know. What'd you think of the bombing missions, like the actual, like, action scenes we get? They're pretty intense, eh?
Yeah, okay, so I'm surprised you didn't like it at the start, to be honest. I thought they kind of opened with a bang where, like, you're thrown into, you're getting a lot of the action at the start with all the bombing missions, and I found the aerial sequences were super cool, and especially when the German planes were flying in, like, at light speed, it seemed they're going,
yeah,
they couldn't pin them down. I thought that was really cool. very well done. And it was always like, there was always an engine going out every single mission. Like, oh, left engine's done. We're going down. Like, man, like, and you guys able to fly, see this mission through? I guess that's just how it was, right? It's not as simple as it seems. But no, I thought everything in the air was very well done. And it was always kind of like at a snail's pace for the bombing mission. Like, I'm getting anxious. I'm like, come on, like, just get to your site and let these bombs fly. And I actually do just want to make a point on that, where I don't know about you, but my perspective was when they actually do their missions successfully and the bombs fly, it was kind of sad in a sense where, like, they succeeded and we're obviously cheering for the Americans, but it's like the bombs are causing immeasurable death and, like, destruction on the ground. We're not seeing, it's like tragic in a sense, right? It's from their perspective, like, they're not even going to see the repercussions of what they're doing at a micro level, but, you know, it's war. It is what it is. All that being said, so like the action sequences a lot from the start, but I agree with you. And I was going to ask you who you like the most. Austin Butler, like, my theory that I said in our Dune episode that he's not that good of an actor. Like, he was not that good at all in this series. Overall, I find he was fine, not bad, but no, Caleb Turner, he was the man. John Egan, I was fired up that he didn't die. I thought he was destined for death, to be honest. It was like Gail Clevin Buck, he was like a god amongst men for some reason. The guy was doing nothing, and they're praising him for his incredible leadership, charisma. I'm like, this guy's not saying anything. It was insane to me how they were just like worshipping this guy, whereas John Egan was kind of more of like a maybe brash and think second, act first kind of guy. I like that. I like that more than I liked a flawed character way more than just like a no weaknesses in his game, like perfectly composed. That's kind of my breakdown of the two Bucks. Like you kind of got way more insight into the struggles of Egan than Clevin, right? Where he's like, he has the wife back home, like or fiance gonna be wife back home, whereas he's single, like going through it, not sure if there's a life for him after the war kind of thing. I thought that was way more interesting than our protagonist Buck. And you knew he wasn't dead too. End of episode was it four? You get the starting lineup of the MLB game of like, or is the starting pitcher down? Like, yep, he didn't make it. So you knew he was going to come back at some point. That, not that it fell flat, but like the whole time, you know, you're not killing this guy off screen, right?
Yeah.
And just before we get off the subject, when Bucky goes into the prisoners' camp, Buck with an all-time moron line of, what took you so long? Like, he's happy to see his best friend join him in prison. I thought that was insane.
Well,
like, you should be pissed to see your boys now shot down and captured. Where I guess you have this, now you know that, okay, at least I know he's not dead. But still, like, I thought that was just a bozo line from this supposedly brilliant leader. Anyways, that's it on them. Rosie was good too. I agree.
I didn't mind that line because it makes Egan laugh. Like, you trying to like elevate his spirit and like be a dick about, like, I don't know. I didn't mind that line actually. It kind of like, I kind of smiled and chuckled when he said that. That was a good moment actually. So yeah. So like I said, the first three episodes, the action was 10 out of 10. I just thought every character was wooden and I didn't really care for anybody. Yeah. But then they started developing the characters more, fleshing out Crosby and others. So then I started liking it even more. And okay, so Clevins goes down episode 4. Austin Butler goes down episode 4. You mentioned, before I continue though, the bombing and not knowing like who you're killing. You're killing hundreds of people. There's a really heartbreaking scene where you see a village that was bombed and there's like a little, there's a girl in the rubble and it's the mom screaming. Like, that was scary. Like, that scared the shit out of me. And I think it's when one of the young pilots is trying to make it to Spain and he sees that. Or maybe I'm confusing myself with another thing. But anyways, that was brutal. They do a good job of showing that a little bit, the atrocities. Rosenthal, once he arrives, I thought the show picked up a little more. Like, I like that. First, he's a rookie. They're kind of like, he's disregarded. He's shy. Yes, he's like, everyone's going to like, Gail Clevin's like, God on Earth, which, by the way, he did land that plane in Africa that was, like, not supposed to, like, fly. Like, they did dump all their stuff and mate. That was cool. I'm not going to lie. That was cool. But Rosie is the true hero of the show, in my opinion. Like, all his accomplishments. That episode where he's the lone pilot left, the lone plane left out of the 13 who makes it back. And he, like, through the skin of his teeth too, like there's two like Messerschmitts on them and he's like weaving and like, okay guys, he's gonna come on the right, shoot him, and like he's like setting up his gunners for perfect shots, which let's just say like this plane has like five different turrets. Like how cool is that? Like up above, on the sides, down below, in the front. Like the B-17 was quite a plane. It was amazing to see. But, like, you wouldn't want to be the guy at the bottom of, like, the glass dome, right? As you could see in episode one, the guy with, like, frostbites his hands because there's a hole in the glass, right, Eric? Or the guy that can't even get out of the hatch and the guy tries to save him, but he's stuck, so he just leaves him to explode. What do you do in that situation? Oh. You have to leave him or you're going to die too, right? So Rosie was the true badass in the air. Rosenthal, like, he was the great pilot. He was way better than Buck, in my opinion, although they showed him a lot more. Let's touch on Crosby. What did you think of Crosby?
So I'm glad you brought main characters. I'm glad you brought it back to him, because what you said, like, where'd they find this schmuck? Like, you're in the Air Force. You're like, you can't be throwing up every time you're in a plane. Like, it's insane to me again. But he did, I guess, find his nerves of steel at one point. I also feel like he was like a horrible navigator at times, where he's like pinpoint them in the completely wrong direction. But then he becomes a master navigator. So I forget how his progression really happened, how realistic it was, kind of loosely remembering that. But he was an interesting character. I liked how he, like I said, progressed and then was sent to Oxford, which is where I feel like his story really got interesting, where he's presented with a moral dilemma in that he's roommates with a British female officer, and right away, I think she walks in on him like naked, buck-ass naked or something.
Yeah.
And you're like, all right, like this is setting the scene for potentially a big test of faith for our man Cross here. And I liked seeing their interactions where, like, she's kind of like one of the boys, but they spend a lot of time together, like have these long nights just pounding back whiskey and just like having these deep conversations about life and stuff. I liked that didn't really go anywhere, and it was kind of just like a nice friendship made between a man and a woman. Fast forward a couple of episodes, and our guy Cross is having to run it back, you know, rerun, can't get this girl off his mind. He's calling her. She was interesting too, where she was, there's an element of mystery into what exactly is her role in the war too. There's a theory from one of my friends, his girlfriend's, that she was a spy. And I kind of like that theory, especially the one episode that starts off where she's like going through these like shady hallways, back alleys, meeting up with people. It looked like she could have been a villain, like a Nazi spy. Turns out that was not correct, but I like the theory though. Anyways, Crosby, he's a rat in the end. Like, he cheated on his wife, but it goes to show just the situations and the pressure that these guys felt. And it touches on what I spoke about earlier in the episode, the vice, you need the escape. Not obviously not condoning it, but like that's just how it was. And for him, it was, he met someone else. And interestingly enough, in the epilogue, they're like the credits, you found out that he stayed with his wife and they had a bunch of kids.
Yeah.
So it's a different lifestyle out there, and you never know what's going to happen. So I guess there must have been some uncomfortable conversations after there, but strong marriage. They worked it out. Glad to hear that for them, but was a bit disappointing, to be honest, to see him go down that path. So Cross, again, like I said, I do like when characters have demons and they're not just like pretty boys who don't do anything wrong, like Buck, you know what I mean? So that's kind of my take on Cross.
So like John Egan, Crosby's a flawed character, which is why I liked him in the end. He's our narrator as well, right? He wrote an autobiography. Like I liked him as a narrator. I enjoyed that. Yes, the escapism, you said it. Like, do you go that far to escape to like be in like cheat on your wife. I get it. You might not even make it to the next day. Like, you might be dead. But, like, there's... Most guys were resorting to, like, alcohol, cigarettes, and, like, other stuff. But, like, I think that's going too far as well. The thing is, if I'm put in that situation, I don't even know what I'm doing. Am I doing like Crosby? I have no idea. I've never been... I don't even want to picture myself in a war scenario. But I think I'd still have the mental fortitude to, like, be faithful to my partner. So, yeah, that was a big fuck up. I also like Crosby's fanatical devotion to... Once he gets in, like, the map room, like... He's in the office, no longer on the plane. Like, he wants to do a great job, and he does a great job. Like, he's up for almost 72 hours planning D-Day. That was a great episode, episode 8. Like, he's staying up. Actually, by doing this, he made himself, like, miss sleep throughout D-Day. But in my head, I was like, you're going to screw up if you stay up, and you're going to make mistakes with these chart readings. Like, it's almost counterproductive to do what he did because, yeah, he gets to work for 70 hours in a row, but... How much of that work is going to be good? Well, apparently it was good because they were very happy with him. But, like, that's counterproductive. Like, that was a little stupid by him, right? Like, take a freaking 2-hour nap.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, Crosby, solid character. Not my favorite. That goes to... Egan was probably my favorite. And then Rosenthal. There's a scene in... talking about, like, another girl. In episode 4 where a lieutenant who arrives with Rosenthal, the lieutenant... kind of befriends the coffee donut girl and, like, starts chattering her up at the bar, and, like, he wants to, like, know more, and then she's like, I can feel her being like, okay, I don't want to get too attached because this probably happens all the time, and then they don't come back, and this lieutenant doesn't come back from his mission, and then she asks about him, and it's super sad, the look on her face when they tell her, like, no, he's gone. She's just like, how many times has this happened to her? It made me really think about that. The people that work on the base, do they get attached or do you have to distance yourself, right? The mortality rate was super high for the pilots, right? The crew of the B-17s, they lost a lot of people, you know? They're doing strategic bombing in daylight, like planes at light speed, like you said, Eric. They're just having a field day and all the flak, and it's a very intense show. There's a lot of POW stuff. Let's get into that, like prison camps, the Stalag Luft 3, you know, where Buck and Bucky end up at. What do you think of all the prisoner of war stuff?
So I found that they were kind of like too well treated. I found like Buck was like fresh as hell when Bucky gets there. He's like, guys got a barber on retainer. Like, I couldn't believe how like these guys, like, they don't have full beards. Like, their hair's not super long. It's crazy.
Right.
But
he's coiffed. Like, yeah.
Still got the fly, the sickest coat too. Like, how do they let him keep that bomber jacket? I couldn't believe it. Anyways.
Yeah, that was unrealistic. Yeah.
So honestly, like, I don't have that much to say on that whole camp because it kind of felt like a certainty that they were going to get out one way or another. I liked seeing Bucky take the hit to let Buck and a few others escape. That was good. They're kind of another thing I didn't really understand is how they jimmy rigged that phone or radio to work. Anyway, I don't want to keep just bashing Buck here, but how he managed to make that thing work was a bit strange in my books. Little confused at all of those scenes, to be honest. When our main characters were in the prisoner of war camp, I kind of wanted to spend more time with Rosie and Croz, and just to not forget on this, like, Croz was like snorting Adderall or something. Like, how is this guy staying up and still, like you said, how is he not making a mistake out here? The whole time I was like, dude, hit the hay for like 4 hours and then just come back. They not have anyone else who could have stepped up here. It's like a one-man job, like bottleneck operation. Anyways.
Yeah.
No, prisoner of war stuff, that's kind of my take on it, was that it didn't really seem brutal. I don't know, maybe it wasn't in real life too. I'm not sure. Like, obviously they didn't have access to the best food and all that, and I feel like they still made them work, but that wasn't as intense as I thought it was going to be, which maybe that's why when Buck was like, hey, we're having a party in here, like, it took you long enough to join us, a blast in this camp. So, like, where I was thinking more of, like, the concentration camps, like, if we had seen more of that, I don't know if that really would have been relevant for the stories that they were telling in this show. That's kind of where, like, you would have seen more atrocities and brutality. So I was kind of expecting to see a bit of that, to be honest, maybe on the lighter side to the American prisoners of war. But again, maybe that's just how it was, that they didn't really... That was the understanding, that if you capture American soldiers, that you can't mistreat them too much. They still did kill some of them. Like when other German officers, when they're going through that city that's just been blown to shreds, they killed a few of the other ones. And then Bucky tried to escape. That was very intense, I found. Like all of those escape attempts were very, like, hold your breath and all that. Like, hope that you can make it out. But then, like, where do you go kind of thing? You're in enemy territory. One more thing I just wanted to say on what you said. The woman who served the coffee and the donuts and all that, like, and the lieutenant who goes out and gets killed, that there's probably thousands of those situations. That's why it was so quickly introduced in there, where we didn't even spend that much time getting to know names. We show that, like, this is something that happened that affected so many people, and we're moving on to the main plot. It's like a microcosm of what everyone in the war endured in a way. So it just makes it even sadder, right?
I love little scenes like that in the background, like subplots. The prisoner of war stuff, I like the mention they make to the movie The Great Escape. There's a mention of British prisoners digging two tunnels or three tunnels and 50 some men got out. Like, that's literally the plot to The Great Escape. So they kind of shout out The Great Escape. Loved it. The British, they were treated well because the Americans and British treated the Germans of prisoners relatively well too, so it's kind of an understanding. The Russians treated the Germans terribly, so the Germans treated the Russians terribly. So it all makes sense. Definitely the prison stuff wasn't as interesting as the escapes were. Those were like when Clevens and the three other guys escaped, that was way more like captivating than like just them just chilling in their barracks at the POW camp. That was cool. And like when they get attacked by like the two teenagers or the three teenagers, and the guy's just taking a leak and the others are sleeping and he gets like bayoneted, like just like, can you imagine? You're still peeing and then like 15-year-old stabs you. Like that was really cool scene. Cool as in like harrowing and like super frightening and shocking. And then the Buck's pointing the gun at the kid. He's like, oh, it's just a kid. Like get out of there. Like that was good. I just want to go back to Rosenthal. Like, he's done. He does 25 missions. He can go home. No, he decides to extend his tour of duty, which is almost unheard of. In the end, ends up flying 52 missions, which is insane, putting his life at risk every time. The man's a badass. Like, he goes down in the no man's land, gets taken by the Russians, gets eventually brought back to England. Like, when he's visiting the camp at the end and the concentration camp and talking to the old Jewish man, that was one of the saddest things I've ever seen in the from the show. It almost had me in tears when he's saying like his children are dead, his wife is dead, everyone's dead, and like I had to make a decision. Like, you don't even want to imagine what he had to do to survive, right? Probably cooperate. So very sad scene. And Rosenthal was a true hero. I mean, they say at the end all the awards he got, like he won the second highest honor. Not the Medal of Honor, like the second one, which I forget what Purple it is now. Heart. He won like a couple Purple Heart, I think is third, I read. I did some research. That was like the third highest honor, but the Silver Star, I think maybe is the second highest. Anyways, he's won a lot of awards and ribbons, and he was at Nuremberg. He's a lawyer. Like, he was a lawyer for most of his life, right? If you Google him, he pops up as a lawyer more than a soldier. And he was at Nuremberg questioning the Germans. So, like, this guy was very involved. A very fascinating character in history. And, yeah, he's a total badass, in my opinion.
It's crazy.
What do you think of Rosenthal overall?
It's crazy. Like, that's something I did want to bring up. Like, that's just, like, a kick in the dick when they're, like, they bump the mission count up from 25 to 28 for everyone else who thinks, like, they've reached that threshold. They're good to head on out. He wants to stick back with the troops, feels a sense of loyalty, maybe obligation to see this through with everybody. Also makes you wonder, like, was there also a part of him that was like, I can't in good conscience like leave here when the war is still going on, and this is I've been so productive and helped out here that if I leave I'll feel so guilty too, and I'm also better served being here. And I don't want to say like FOMO, like that's not the right expression, but kind of to a sense, like he would not be okay with himself to just be back at home knowing that the fighting's still going on. So obviously like the ultimate leader, active hair, like silver medals for days for Rosie. 52 is crazy. I feel like there was someone in Band of Brothers 2 that was in a similar situation where could have been sent home, decided to stay back and keep going. I don't know if that's like a common trait in soldiers. Of course, many of them, I'm sure, would relish the opportunity to go back home once they've served their tour of duty. But there's the ones that are above and beyond them. The true leaders, like, they stay until the job is done. So, no, yeah. Rosie was a legend. Like you said, a good injection to the show because we need another good character to be rooting for. And he was the guy. So
there's one more thing I want to ask you. Like, for Rosie's natural born leader, he eventually commands the whole squadron, actually. Like, when Buck comes back and Rosie's all, like, sucking up to him, I'm like, no, freaking Clevin should be sucking up to you. You're the actual badass. Speaking of the last episode, Eric, what do you think of Egan raising the American flag during the liberation of the camp? Too American, too Hollywood, or did you like
so
that?
So, you know what? I'm not even, like, we're not American here, but I was feeling a little patriotic in that scene, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was a sick scene.
Yeah.
Like, I was fired up when he got up there, everyone's cheering. Obviously, also just the fact of taking down the Nazi Germany flag, that in itself is, like, that's a dub. And then, yeah, like, the American flag, obviously, Americans, they lost it at that, but I was still pumped to see that. That was a, maybe not chills, but chills adjacent scene, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
It was a cool moment for sure. But like I said, like, I thought he was, at any moment he could have gotten clipped, like even on his way there, like he could have gotten shot or something. I was never really sure about seeing it all the way through to the end. Because of his nature too, of like just being more like the wild card on the edge. You?
He kept my interest in the show way more than Austin Butler. Like, he was super not perfect, like, picking arguments, fights.
Yeah.
Like, with the British Air Force in, like, episode 2. Like, he was... Calum Turner did a great job of, like, portraying someone that's probably more realistic to what the soldiers are actually like. Like, no one's, like... The Austin Butlers are super rare. Like, the stoic, like, perfect...
Cerebral.
That, I don't even know if that's... that ever happened, you know, like, I don't know, maybe it's just Austin Butler's acting that made it that way, but like Calum Turner stole the show and one of the biggest strengths of the show in my opinion. And would I rewatch the show one day? Maybe after a long passage of time, because I don't go back to war shows very often. No, overall, very solid show. If you like war, like Band of Brothers is Europe, Pacific is the Pacific War front, and this is all about the air. And if you're a plane nut, like, there's a lot of those people like that love their air warfare, like, this is the show for you. It's really cool, and it might be the best that's ever been done, showing like the little details and intricacies of like bombing missions. You know, you don't see that a lot in movies, so it's a really cool show. Maybe the next show they'll do is like a Navy centric show with submarines and stuff, because that hasn't been done yet. So no, overall, I really, really enjoyed the show.
Give Das Boot a run for its money. Last note, too, is Barry Keoghan was in this. So that's no, nothing to say on that. But, you know, it was a great show. Like, I would say run that whole trilogy, honestly. The Band of Brothers Pacific, which I'm almost done. I'll be done by, like, a few days from now. And, yeah, Master of the Air, great show. Yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see like where these actors are in this, if they get any other opportunities. The actor who plays Crosby, funnily enough, the day that Mass of the Air ended, a new show on Apple TV just started, Manhunt, which follows like John Wilkes Booth there. It's like that story.
Mm.
So he's in that show. So I wonder if he's going to get a lot more, maybe just Apple's, he's their new star. But Calum Turner, I'm interested to see what he does next. Austin Butler, we all know, he's like the guy right now. He's getting signed and everything. But he did a great job in Dune 2, so can't discredit him fully. I know we've been bashing the Buck character, but I think there's still a lot to like of him in like for his future roles for sure. So yeah, that'd be it, honestly, for me too. Quite enjoyed it. Definitely a recommend. Yeah, did you have anything you wanted to recommend, Matt?
Yeah, I'll recommend one thing, actually. But Austin Butler, I think, too good looking for the role.
Agreed,
you see Gale Clevin in real life at the end. They show like the real life counterparts and doesn't look a thing like Austin Butler, but Egan looked exactly like Calum Turner. So like, did they pick too much of, they picked the name Austin Butler for views or something, because they should have picked someone that was way more realistic to the real life person. So maybe that threw me off. You know, if he was too polished up. Anyways, he was like a Ken doll in uniform, you know.
This has just been an anti-Buck pod.
Yeah, I know, and I don't mean to, man. He was great in Dune Tune. I haven't watched Elvis yet. I have one movie to recommend, Eric. Do you have... did you want to go first, or do you want me to spit out my movie?
No, I can go. I got a couple of things I could rip. Rewatched this recently. I hadn't seen it in a long time. Hell or High Water. Great movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just a fun kind of heist movie. It's like a bank robbers movie. Two brothers who are just hitting the road in Texas, hitting all these Midland, Texas banks. I think that's the branch. Like, all their different offices or, yeah, branches. Yeah, like, they're just, you're not really sure what the motivation is the whole time. It's Chris Pine is one of the brothers, and what's his face is the other main actor there.
Ben Foster.
Yes, Ben Foster. But I'm talking about the other guy, Jeff Bridges. Oh. He's the, like, kind of the villain, if you will. He's the one, the sheriff who's trying to take them down as they're on their criminal heist run. Hilarious movie. I found Ben Foster as the other brother was, he's more like the Bucky, and Chris Pine is like the Buck, if we're to just keep this going. He's more like your straight shooter. The younger brother who's calmer, more in control. The older brother is like the wild card. He's been in prison. He's a little more reckless, but I love their dynamic together, and just seeing where it goes. Like, they keep robbing these banks, getting away with it. Like, you know, they're kind of destined to hit some hiccups along the way, so the journey is, it's always rolling, always something to keep you interested, whether it's humor or action. Very good, good dialogue. It's on Netflix. Strong recommend. Hell or High Water. Great movie.
I've seen this movie once at the theater and I loved it, Eric, and I'm due for a rewatch. I even bought the movie and I haven't popped it in yet, because I think I cherish that theater experience, because I thought it was a perfect movie. Script is perfect. Ben Foster's explosive performance, so memorable. Like, the movie's like 7 years old and I still remember it super well. Jeff Bridges banter with his partner, right? The end game, like, why they're doing this, you find out a little bit more about, like, the bank and stuff like that with Chris Pine's situation. Anyways, Hell or High Water, super extremely recommend this movie. Good choice, Eric. When I saw you had reviewed it, I'm like, fuck, I keep forgetting about that movie and rewatching it. But yeah, good
pick. Funnily enough, I'll just say, you lent me that movie back in the day alongside Hacksaw Ridge. It was in the same pack,
no
I
way.
Remember, and I watched them both from you. So yeah, full circle.
Nice. Okay. I'm going to recommend one movie. It might be one of the best movies ever made. No exaggeration. It's a French movie called La Haine, or Hate in English. I'm just reading the back because I'm remembering. It's from 95, an hour and a half long. I'm just going to read the synopsis because, like, I can't do this justice. Aimlessly passing their days in the concrete environs of their dead-end suburbia, Vince, played by Vincent Cassel, Hubert, and Saïd, a Jew, an African, and an Arab, give human faces to France's immigrant populations, their bristling resentment at their marginalization slowly simmering until it reaches a climactic boiling point. A work of tough beauty, La Haine is a landmark of contemporary French cinema and a gripping reflection of its country's ongoing identity crisis. So this movie came out in the 90s. Still to this, like, it has themes that are relevant to this day. Racism, rich versus poor. Are you a product of your environment, or were you born that way, or did your environment make you that way? Nurture versus nature. Electrifying performances on all fronts. You don't even feel like they're acting. This is how good this movie is. It follows them in a 24-hour period. They're just chilling, hanging out. Not a huge plot, more like following them in their day-to-day lives, slice of life. But it gets very intense dialogue, intense conversations, great soundtrack. Anyways, this movie, it's shot in black and white too. This movie, La Haine, is maybe the best French movie ever made. No exaggeration. It's that good. It's a movie that you study in film school, but it's also just like an entertaining movie to watch too. I recommend it to anybody. Criterion Collection has put this movie out. That's La Haine, French film from 95. Great movie.
Nice, man. No, I saw that you gave it a nice rating the other day there, so I will like to check that out as well. It popped up on my Instagram a few days ago too, funnily enough. Like, so no, it's on my list. I love being able to see a French movie. I feel like I've talked about that often on the pod there. It's rare, but I feel like that's one of those classics that you gotta see. So La Haine is on my list as well. I got a couple of shows. I think last episode I said I didn't really want to recommend them until maybe I was more into them or it was done. But I'm just going to let them rip now. Two of them. So one that I'm watching weekly. I'm not sure if you're watching this, Matt. X-Men 97 on Disney Plus.
No.
Fantastic show. Love the animation style. Because like I just like old school looking anime or cartoon. I think it's phenomenal. I like it more than like digital or... really, like maybe 3D computer generated images. Like, no slight to Bad Batch. I enjoy Bad Batch a lot. I think it's great animation. But when I go back to back between those two shows, like, there's just something about that old school look of X-Men 97 that they've nailed that I find way more visually appealing to look at. The colors, the over the top thing, like, explosions. It's like maybe a little choppy and slow, but there's something to enjoy in that. Not only that, but the stories and the dialogue is fantastic in this show. Like, there's some adult stuff in this show that's definitely a kid's show. Okay. Don't get me wrong, but like they're hinting at like sex, for example, which you're not really seeing in Marvel show, let alone an animated show. So I think there's a lot, and obviously X-Men is always political with like the us versus them. Oh, you're marginalizing an oppressed group of individuals. So there's a lot to like in this show, and they're nailing it through four episodes so far. I'm absolutely loving it. So X-Men 97 on Disney Plus, definitely. It's like 30 minute episodes too, super easy to rip through.
I hear great things about it. I'm not gonna lie, I've seen clips on like TikTok and social media, certain fight scenes that are actually totally badass. So I'm gonna add it to my list, Eric. Definitely gonna have it watched for like our top 10 that we're gonna do early next year. So cool.
Yep. Another show that I'm liking for sure. I'm not done it yet, but I do want to finish it. The Gentlemen on Netflix. So based on, it's a spinoff of the movie The Gentlemen, Guy Ritchie. Halfway through, I'd say so far it's pretty good. It's a nice, like, the new story every time, like episodic feel of like mini arcs that resolve themselves. It's Theo James is the main character. His father is a duke in England. He passed away. He's now inherited his fortune and a lot of operations that he had that under his nose, he had no idea he was involved in like illicit activity. So a lot of money, and now introduced to a criminal underworld. The main actress too, she's the girl in the Maze Runner movie. She looks exactly like Emma Stone in this show too.
Yeah.
I don't know her name.
Kyla something.
Yeah.
Kyla something.
She's
like
great.
Scaladero.
Yeah. Yeah. No, big fan of her. She's really good in this. So.
She's. Yeah.
Kaya Scodelario. Yeah.
Okay.
Great show. Honestly, like, it's pretty funny at times as well. My critique right now is that the Theo James character, shades of Buck, like always just stoic, always he always has the answers kind of thing. I'm waiting for him to slip up, which so far he hasn't, but I don't like a Rick from The Walking Dead who's always like perfect, like doesn't really make any mistakes. That's why I was more of a John Bernthal guy in The Walking Dead. Shane, flawed character. So anyways, we'll see where it goes, but overall I'm enjoying it. It's a solid show, would recommend, especially if you've seen the movie The Gentlemen. Which I have not, but if you like that style, I'm sure you'd like the show. So, two pack right there.
Sweet. I mean, I rewatched The Gentleman, the movie, because I'm interested in watching the show. So, I'm going to start the show soon. I really like the movie. So, excellent.
Good stuff.
That's all I got.
Same.
I think we gave lots of stuff for the viewers to
definitely
to watch.
Definitely. I'm also done Murtaugh, by the way. I just want to share that to the listeners.
Oh.
I crushed it since our last
Was it
pod.
Good?
Oh, yeah. I loved it. I was looking at reviews online, though.
Okay.
A lot of people did not like this book. I completely disagree. I was hooked. Like, the last 250 pages, I devoured them as a dragon would.
All right.
Pretty much anything. So, no, definitely. Hopefully, they don't wait too long to release the next book.
Sweet. Good to hear. I've picked it back up, so... I'll give you my thoughts when I'm done. We'll do a mini review.
Sounds good. So, yeah, no, great stuff, Matt. A lot of fun. Lots to go over in this episode. And that was super interesting to go through the war genre. So any final notes for the listeners?
No, everybody, thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed the episode. We've been going a while longer than normal. We talked a lot about war movies, and you guys submitted a great list. Thank you to everyone who submitted a pick. And I can't talk right now. Just thank you for listening and enjoy your spring.
Yeah, it was the right call to shut it down. We've been going long here. Shadow, great. Thanks a lot, everybody, for listening. Stay tuned for episodes dropping every 2 Mondays. Continue to enjoy the spring. Hopefully the snow is gone by the time this drops. And yeah, peace.